Welcome, everyone. This is just Brian this time. I am doing a audio Q&A with John Harper. Hi, John.
How you going?
And I'm doing this because, I'll be honest, folks, I suck at writing Q&A questions. I suck at it. I suck so hard. So John and I have been going back and forth for a while about doing a Q&A. I'm like, look, it's more fun for me, at least. It's more interesting to do an audio one. And you were like, sure, but you're in New Zealand. I'm in Los Angeles. We have to figure this out. So it's a Saturday night at 7 o'clock my time. It was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday, your time.
That's right. It's a lazy Sunday afternoon.
Oh, that's
bit of
nice.
Baking. Wife's been asleep.
Oh, nice. Where in New Zealand are you?
Wellington. It's basically bang in the middle.
That's like probably... I have a public education in America, so that's probably the only city I know in New Zealand.
It's the capital.
Yeah, that's probably why I know of it. That's we're terrible people over here. We're just awful people. But you are working on a tie-in novel, and I'll be honest, I've never interviewed an author before, so this is kind of interesting. But you're a video game fan, so it works out. You're doing a tie-in novel to Elite Dangerous.
That's right. Yeah.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. I mean, Elite's a game that I played as a six-year-old. It came out in 84, but I didn't get a hold of it until sort of 87, 88 on the Atari ST. And, yeah, it was amazing, like, playing it as a kid. And I played the sequel sort of as a pre-teen and early teen. And then, you know, girls and cars took over. But, you know, before then it was a big part of my life.
Now, you said something, I think it was on your Indiegogo page, that said, quote, "Elite is what made my father's Atari ST go up in smoke."
That's right, yeah.
I would love to hear that story.
It was an Atari ST 512, which just meant it had 512K RAM, and he had put an extra 512K RAM in it to enable me to play more computer games on it. And I was, in the game Elite, there's 8 galactic maps, and you start in the first galactic map in the bottom left-hand corner, and I wanted to get to the far right-hand corner, the opposite corner.
Right.
Because in the bottom left-hand corner, there's human colonies, and in the middle, there's alien colonies. In the far right, there's more human colonies that look like cowboys. I wanted to go check it out. and, you know, it can take a long time to travel from system to system to system. Sort of what I worked out is if you have a lot of money, you fly to the next system, then use your escape capsule, bang, in terms of gameplay time, you're instantly at the space station. You get a brand new ship as you're part of your insurance package. Fly off the next system, escape capsule, and escape captured my way all the way across the galactic map.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, and in about, I don't know, in terms of my destination, 2 or 3 systems out, and the screen went blank, and then some smoke just started coming out of the vents of the computer. And gosh damn, did I start panicking.
Oh my God.
I was like, panicking when my dad comes home, and I was just going to get in so much trouble. But it was actually pretty sweet. It was just the extra RAM had sort of, I don't know, whatever, had fried, so he took the extra RAM out, and everything was fine again. So it was I got off lightly.
Dude, that's a relief. Maybe it wasn't installed properly or something? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Or it was cheap, nasty stuff. I don't know. I don't know the history of it.
So you started playing, did you start playing the original Elite, or was it like Elite Plus, or was it, which one was it?
Yeah. It was Elite. It was original Elite, but it was a ported version. So the original was wireframe graphics on the BBC Micro.
Yes.
It got ported to things like the Spectrum and so forth. But then years passed and technology improved. And when it was ported to around the time when I was, you know, playing, like 87, 88, the Amiga and the Atari were sort of the more eminent gaming computer. The Amiga 500 was the gaming computer that all my friends had. I had an Atari. I was the reject of the group. But the Amiga was the main one.
Yeah,
they both had the same. Sorry.
No, I had a PC. I had a Tandy. I had a PC. So, I really was jealous of my friends who had Amigas. So I know how you feel.
Yeah. So they're called the 68000 processor or something like that. Anyway, they had graphics instead of just being wireframe. Everything was colored in, and there was pictures attached to it. So it was the original game, but it looked a whole lot nicer than the absolute original. Yeah, but the gameplay was the same. And actually, it was a bit worse because the original game had, I think, 8 sort of special missions, and they weren't carried over in the port. So
it was just a pure sandbox then. It didn't even have the missions.
Yeah, that's right. And I spent all this time looking for them. I couldn't understand why I couldn't get them to work. And it was only, many, many years later when internet was around that I realized that I'd been wasting my time all this time because they weren't even in the port.
I must admit I didn't play a ton of time with Elite because I got Elite Pl I got my first computer in 85, and so I went right to Elite Plus, and I played a little of that and it was okay. But then shortly, like, I got distracted by other games. But then Elite 2 came out and I played the fuck out of that one. Oh my god, I played the crap out of Elite 2 because it had like. I think it was the first game that had the transition from planet side to space that was just seamless, if I recall. I don't remember another game that had that before that.
No, it was pretty amazing, really. And you could even go down to, fly down, like you say, go find a city, and some of them had clock towers, and the clocks were actually giving you the accurate in-game time. It was pretty fantastic, really.
How, I mean, okay, how did you get involved with Elite Dangerous?
Well, I've been doing a lot of sort of fan fiction for Elite between the third game, which came out in 94-ish, I think, and when the just recently when Elite Dangerous was starting to kick around. And I've been doing fan fiction, so I was in the sort of the community already. And the Kickstarter for Elite Dangerous came along, and there's a lot of fan fiction people obviously involved, in the community beforehand. They all want all putting their hands up, basically saying they want to get involved. And I think they must have had enough sort of messages, because maybe 1 or 2 weeks into the Kickstarter, new reward tiers come through. You know how Kickstarters work, I'm assuming most
Of
people do these
course.
days, I guess.
Of course, yeah.
So a new tier came in at £4,500. You could write an official licensed piece of fiction, and my first response was, "Well, Christ, I don't have £4,500. That's like, at the time, that was like $9,000-$10,000 of my local New Zealand currency. That's like 10 grand.
Holy gosh.
Don't have 10 grand. So my initial response was to go back to them and say, "Well, obviously a lot of people won't be able to afford that, but you played. Oh, did you play First Encounters Elite 3? Because they had newspapers in there and they
Oh,
had newspaper
yeah.
articles and stuff like that."
Absolutely. Sure, yeah.
And I thought, what if I could, write one of those newspaper articles or
Was
something?
one of
That would
the
be
o
quite cool.
that was one of the only things that worked in that game. What a
Well,
mess.
for me, they didn't work. I played it. I don't know what version I had, but after a while, they stopped working. And whenever there was a system, when something happened and it was mentioning a solar system, it was always the solar system that I was in. So if such and such a pirate was doing something, or someone was killed in such a system, it was always the system that I was in, no matter which system I was in. I don't think I was supposed to do that. But anyway, some other people started doing their own crowdfunding Kickstarter campaigns to pay for that £4,500 pledge tier for the main Kickstarter. So
Right.
doing a Kickstarter for a Kickstarter, and my first thought was, man, it's stupid. But it started working for some, so I thought, okay, well, there's a benefit here. So I thought about it myself, and I thought, okay, if I'm going to ask people for money, they're kind of like an investor, or they're not a publisher, but they're someone asking for money to put a story forward. So really, I should come up with all the information I can for them, so they
Right.
can make an informed decision. So I sort of came up with a synopsis and sort of described, what the story's about. What is my skill set and my history with Elite, talk about my passion for it and all the fan fiction I'd done. And the next part was coming up with the rewards that people would get for being involved, and had to be a bit creative with that. But basically, people like to be involved, and so I was getting people in as alpha readers, or naming characters or places in the
Right.
novel, and things like that. And as a little bonus, the £4,500 pledge tier for the main Kickstarter came with some other bonuses, like naming a solar system in the computer game, or naming a space station in Elite Dangerous. And so I unsold those effectively to people. So, I get this option to name the planet. You pay me the $1,000, whatever, and you get the you get my reward. And
Oh.
it was a very close thing. I was pretty much, with 2 days to go, I was pretty down and out and thinking, yeah, it's going to take a miracle for it to happen. And then I got a pledge of like $1,100.
Whew.
It's amazing. And I said, "Are you sure about this? Are you happy with this?" He was like, "Yeah, no. the passion that you're showing me for this is I need to see you make this story. So that got me within a whisker. And then that final day, it was probably bad time on my behalf, but it was finishing about 7 a.m., 8 a.m. UK time. And so most of the fans, obviously UK fans, I suppose, because it's games made in the UK, so they're all only just waking up, coming on the Kickstarter, and I was just pushing really hard, please, 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 everyone, just throw money at me. And they did, and I got across the line, just, I think I got $150 over the line, just made it.
Yeah, I see that. I was reading, I was doing a little research beforehand, so I looked, of course, looked at the Indiegogo. Yeah, you made it with $166 to spare.
Yeah, it was a pretty, and that was of course my night time, 7 p.m. my time. It was pretty damn intense. And then what I didn't think about was all the PayPal fees I'd have to pay. So
Oh.
that I didn't plan for that. I think it was $7,566 I think I asked for.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be about £4,000, thinking I'd cover up the rest. But I had PayPal conversion from American to New Zealand and PayPal from New Zealand to British, and then Indiegogo took their percentage and they all sort of added up. So they ended up actually being, over $1,000 out of pocket. But
Oh.
it didn't matter, didn't matter. I got the reward in, and I started on it straight away, and I haven't really stopped since.
So yeah, I read the excerpt you had here on the Indiegogo page, which I really liked. Now, my question I've always wanted to ask Italian author, especially the video games, because usually either the video game has its own story, or a game like Elite, you kind of make your own story, like the player is making their own story. So how do you create your own niche in that universe? How do you create your own mark on that universe that doesn't really give you a lot? It feels like it doesn't give you a lot to work with, at least to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have stations and you have ships and you have battles, but that's not much of a story besides what the player is making for themselves.
Yep, you're right, I suppose. There's also the political factions and their relationships with each other as well, which sort of came more through in the second or third game than when even in the first game. And I was, pretty intimate with the Elite universe, I suppose. I pretty much knew most of what was available just because I'd been played it for so long and was immersed in the fan fiction. So I sort of, knew what was going on, and it's just the next sort of the new stuff that's coming for Elite Dangerous, which I sort of had to learn and then alter my plans accordingly. But in terms of a story, there's so many options out there of things you can do. There's, I don't know, probably 1,000 colonized worlds. There's the three main factions. There's the independence between them, and just like in the first game, you've got anarchic systems, you've got communist systems, you've got dictatorships, corporate worlds. I think corporate worlds are a really rich place to sort of, base stories, because what they get up to can be either really good or really, really bad, and they can look really good but actually be really bad. And sort of you want to take all of these sort of elements and use them as you can. And so my story is, I guess, at its heart, it's about a guy working to save the galaxy, but it's also a journey of self-discovery and sort of learning to accept who he is, and living with himself. He's a bit of a flawed guy. He's got a lot of mental issues going on. But at his heart, he's a good guy, but he doesn't really think that he is. So he goes on a journey of self-discovery at the same time that he has to, save the galaxy. So, my story touches on pretty much everything I think of that's important to the Elite Universe. All the political factions are involved. A lot of different types of people and ships and places are used. I try and mix it up a bit. So, yeah, you got to get that elite flavor in there. But at its core, it's just an adventure in space, using exciting characters, doing exciting things, that has enough elite flavor in it that you know that it's an elite story. But it also has to be so enmeshed in the history of Elite that you couldn't just translate the story, put it somewhere else, and make sense. It only work in the Elite universe with these political factions and with these things going on in this history. If you didn't have all those things, the story wouldn't work. So I've tried to make it as core to Elite's being as possible while being its own story. I'm using my own characters. But of course, the exciting thing is that those characters and those places are going to be interlinked with the game to some degree.
Yeah, that kind of leads into my next question. Like, how close are you working with the Elite Dangerous folks to either integrate these characters into the game? And that's awesome that they're good, that you're gonna like you might meet them while you're playing the game.
Yeah, I think it's really, really awesome. And I don't think anyone's ever done this before. They've taken it beyond anything else, and I think it's really exciting. Just the ability to read a book and then perhaps play aspects of the book is mind-bogglingly brilliant, I reckon. To start off with, it blows my mind every time I think about it. I just can't wait to see the final product and see my stuff in there. I spent a lot of time talking with Frontier Developments at the start. Obviously, first making sure that they're happy with my plot and what I'm planning on doing. And there was a big elite myth that I wanted to use, and it was the core to my story, and they said, yeah, no, you can't use that. We don't want it to become, we want it to stay a myth, and it would kind of demystify the myth, my story. I didn't want that. So I came up with my own myth. I said, yep, that's brilliant, that's awesome, and do this with it, and it'll be okay. Like, sweet. So they sort of okayed my story, the basic broad strokes of the plot, and then I went off sort of figuring it all out in minute detail. And yeah, I sort of, as I went along, I said, look, I'm going to need, these places, if I want to interlink the game, with the story, I'm going to need this kind of stuff. And so my basically agreed on a few things, which was pretty exciting. I don't really want to reveal it. But needless to say, there's some things that we discussed which made me extremely happy. Squee happy as a fan. Very, very cool. And so that sort of conversation ended. And we've got a sort of our own forum for all the writers. And so when they're further down the road, they're going to then start having those conversations again. They're saying, look, what have you got? And we'll see what we can put in. And they have that conversation one on one. They haven't got to that stage yet, but it will be coming pretty soon.
Oh, very cool. And how much of the book have you done so far?
Well, I've finished the whole thing.
Oh, cool.
Did the first draft. I've done a second draft, and that's when I sent it out to alpha readers to have a read. And everyone that's replied to me has said they thoroughly enjoyed it. Called it a page turner, unputdownable. It's fantastic. So that was a pretty positive feedback, and maybe four or five have come back with some real detailed feedback for me to work on. There's some elements there which I agree not ideal, and as I go through it myself, I realize well this scene here's not really advancing the plot, so that's going to go, and might change the point of view here and fix that. So I'm currently working through that edit. I'm about chapter 20, I think. I'm just about to start chapter 20 of 21, so I've almost
Okay.
finished that second edit. And sort of sending it in chunks to my publisher. So the publisher's had the first half, and I'm just sort of finishing off the last half, and they'll get the last half pretty soon. They'll do their edit of it. I'll run through it again, probably another couple of runs, and then it'll be done. So it's
And
pretty well advanced.
you said you had a publisher. Where is this going to be available? Amazon and all that? iBooks and all that?
Amazon and Smashwords, is it?
What's
Smash Mouth? Smash. It's
what?
a UK publishing company, so it's going to be on Amazon, but there's also another site called Smashwords, I think it's called, which will be available, and of course the publisher's got their own web store as well. So it's going to be an ebook format as a minimum. We're looking at paperback as well. No more information than that at present, but we're probably going to do that as well, and audiobook as well.
Oh, audiobook. That's
Yeah.
exciting. Well, how does that work? Like, how do you find someone to read your audiobook for you?
Oh, that's the brilliant thing about having a publisher. So he's already done all that. They've
Oh.
talked to actors, got people sort of interested in wanting to do it. What my publisher, Fantastic Books Publishing, based in the UK, they're actually fundraising on Indiegogo themselves to make this audiobook division. So they're asking for $25,000, which would get them all basically started and get two books produced. And once that division's up and running, then they can use that for my story as well. And they've got two other Elite Dangerous writers signed up as well. So that's potentially three Elite Dangerous novels that can be audiobookized by this one company. But they need to meet their crowdfunding, campaign to do that straight away. So that's something that I'm hoping they'll get a bit more money on and complete, and then we can have the audiobook version. So they're basically doing all the work for that. I give them the raw material, and they go from there.
Oh, and I didn't even know this. I feel kind of stupid for not knowing this, but I'm only one guy, you know. But I saw that on your Indiegogo page. There are at least two other, at least funded, elite, dangerous novels in the works.
Yeah, I think there's 30 pieces of fiction
Oh my
that are
God.
going to be released, with 30 licenses, I should say. 15 of those are short stories that are being combined into one anthology. So I guess in terms of books, it's actually 15 or 16 books. Now, there's Gallants, I think that's how you pronounce it, which is a UK imprint, science fiction imprint. They brought three licenses, and since they brought those licenses, no one's heard anything about who's going to write them, what they're going to be about, when they're going to be released. We don't know anything about them. They've kind of just disappeared into the ether. But there is, along with my novel, there's a novel by a man called Drew Wager, Alan Stroud, and there's a lady, oh, she's going to be upset that I forgot her last name, Kate. Maybe just edit that out. But I should say it again. She'll destroy me. Now, let me just find out, hey, before I get murdered.
No problem. I don't want you getting murdered. And I don't know how to edit this sort of stuff. So, whoops.
Okay,
This
well,
is why when I do a podcast, I'm doing it with someone else who does know this stuff.
maybe I should do the editing then. Yeah, so and a lady, Kate Russell's doing a novel as well,
Wow.
and there's another man, TJ, who's doing a novel as well, and then the rest are not novels. There's an RPG rule book, and there's a dice choose your own adventure style story.
Really?
Yeah, that he's, well, he's working on it. And then there's another one that's a crowd-sourced novel. So like people go to the website and put up their own chapters, and they get voted on, and whichever chapter is the best one gets chosen, and they sort of build the story from there. Quite, I'm not sure if they're going to be ready by March 2014. It's a pretty cool idea. It's quite hard work for them, I think. But hopefully
Sounds like
that'll succeed as well. And there's a couple that have just sort of gone off the face of the earth a little bit. Haven't really heard much from them, so I don't really know how they're progressing. But yeah, I think there's like 15 all up.
oh my God. And a pen and paper role-playing game. That gets me excited because I love those things.
Yeah, he's the guy who's he's got a website, an elite fan website that he's kept alive for so long, and he's done a lot of, work on. Okay, well, we know from the original manual the ship is this big, and so he's done designs of the layouts, and he's done a whole history of the Elite Universe, trying to bridge the original game to the new games, the second and third one. You know how there's quite a disparity in their history. The first game doesn't have anything about the Federation or the Empire in it, but the second games do. So he's tried to bridge that gap. So he's done a bit of, the whole setting up the universe and doing the rules and stuff. He's quite into that. So it's a pretty good match for him.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, because like I said, I played the second one more, and I didn't remember there being an empire and a federation in the first game at all. So.
No. So the history now kind of goes is that there was a breakdown in relationship between the Galactic Cooperative, which was Lave and Deeso and Redcott and Leasty and all those ones from the original game. So the Federation Empire always there, but there was a breakdown in communication, so you weren't allowed to cross borders and whatnot. But then Galcop eventually broke down, and Lave and Deeso eventually joined the rest of the galactic community. So it all sort of kind of works, but. I think you gotta.
Now, how excited are you about the game itself?
You're pretty excited, actually. I mean, I don't know when I'm going to get the time to play it because I'm busy writing all the time. But what I really love, and what's really exciting me the most, is not the graphics or any of that stuff. It's the fact that there's going to be a fiction narrative there now, and it's still going to be a sandbox, even more so than the previous games. But you can make your own story, by your actions have consequences. So you can, the way the, I'm not sure how much of that I'm allowed to reveal, but basically the way that you travel through the galaxy has changed, and that's going to allow people to to explore new ways. So you can create new maps or add on to the navigation maps and get paid for that. And you can change the way that produce can get shipped from A to B, might go through your new route instead, which makes it cheaper. But then that means Planet C misses out, and so they go into famine. So they start, offering more money, and then the people might start trying to take advantage of it, and then they might hire people to protect them, and then all these kind of things can happen just from this one action that you did. The butterfly effect. You can buy and sell slaves, and you can free slaves, or you can hire, you can take a person as a passenger and make them a slave,
Okay,
and
you
they
know
obviously
what?
won't make them happy.
You know what? You should have written their pitch. I'm sorry, but their original pitch did not really gel with me. You know what I mean? But what you're saying sounds awesome. The way you're describing it sounds like, oh yeah, I want to play that. Absolutely, I want to do that. That sounds great. But the way their I'm sorry, their original pitch is like, what? Really? It just left me a little cold,
Yeah,
honestly.
it's fair enough. I was blinded by fanboy. I had fanboy sunglasses on, or whatever the term is. I just sort of, fuck, Elite Four, shit, yeah. How much? Just here's my money. Just take my money and shut up.
If I'm a fanboy of anything, it's did you ever play the Starflight games? Did you ever play those?
No, Starflight.
Oh, dude, go to GOG and get those right now. Seriously, they're so good. But yeah, so I probably felt if someone like announced Starflight 3 officially with the original developers, I'd probably be in the same boat you would have been when they announced Elite Dangerous. I'm like, oh my God. But
Yeah,
I
I don't
got
know
it.
if they were.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say that I don't know if they were relying on the existing fan community to pull them through or not. It's kind of, quite a lot of people were upset with the quality of the Kickstarter and how much progress they put in compared to Star Citizen, which was, on at the same time. Star Citizen was like $20 million and everyone loved it, and there was just so many updates and they're all visual and everyone just got excited about it. But they were a lot more progressed, and I think, Frontier might have launched earlier than they wanted to. They wanted to launch with the launch of Kickstarter UK, and they weren't very far developed, and maybe in hindsight they should have delayed it a bit, I'm not sure, but they didn't have as much to show, and maybe they didn't really know what they were doing as well as much now. But knowing what I know,
Kickstarter is like a is like almost a full-time job or any crowdfunding, really.
oh mate, yeah, I mean, the one that I did, I was having to just continue to produce stuff because that's what people want. They want audio, they want visual, they just want updates. If you're not doing updates, it goes stale for some reason. It's
Well, yeah, I mean, I one
frigging.
of the, yeah one of these Indiegogo things you sent you have on your thing, it's like Elite Dangerous the novel, and the guy has two updates. That's like it. And it's like, no, if you want an update, if you want a successful campaign, you gotta do a lot more than that.
I'd definitely do things a lot differently if I was doing it again. On my website, I sort of did a bit of a breakdown on what I did and how I could do it better. And there was, I mean, it's the first time I'd done it. It was the first time I even touched video editing. It's the first time I tried to engage with people that knew nothing about me and try and convince them to give me money. So it was definitely a learning experience, and I would do it differently next time. It is hard work.
Yeah, no, I've heard everything. Whenever I've talked to a person who's done a Kickstarter or Indiegogo, they're like, "Oh my God, so much harder than I thought it would be. Oh my God, it's so much work." But it paid off because you have a lot of updates, you got a lot of engagement, and it paid off, splendidly, which is great, But yeah, I've seen a lot of Kickstarters just and other crowdfunding campaigns, just like the one you linked to, that was like, okay, I'm gonna launch this. Whatever. Like, I'll be honest, that video, did you see the video they put out, Frontier put out with the cap ship battle, the recent one?
Yeah,
Holy
wasn't that amazing?
crap. If they had put that out with their initial Kickstarter campaign,
Shit, yeah, everyone would have signed up, wouldn't
I would have been in from the word go. That video did convince me to back it. I went to the website immediately after that and just sent them my money. I'm like, I'm in. I'm finally in. It took that much, but they should have done that from the get-go because that was an amazing video, and it's almost all in game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's going to look like, pretty much. It's
Oh my
quite
God.
amazing. Yeah. I was doing some editing for the novel, and when it came out, I said, "Oh, that sounds really cool, but I've got to finish this chapter. I've got to finish this chapter." And one of the guys that I sort of chat to in the elite community keeps saying, "You got to watch it. It's awesome. It's awesome. It's awesome. You got to watch it now." It's like, "I've got to finish this chapter." "No, shut up. Do it now. Do it now." So I gave in, and it was awesome. It was well worth the
Yeah,
watch.
I watched it like 5 times. I was like, "Oh, that's so great." And I had friends who were like complaining about things, like, "Why are the ships getting so together and slugging it out like man like ships of the line in Hornblower or whatever?" I'm like, "Shut up. Who cares?
It looks awesome.
It looked awesome. Who cares? Just
For sure.
deal with it. It looks great. Whatever." If it makes a compelling and engaging experience, I don't care how they do it. They can have sound in space. I don't care. As long
For
as
sure.
it's fun.
Absolutely.
So do you play Pioneer at all, that newer one? Do you play that at all?
I did. Yeah, and I was actually getting involved in, writing the backstory for it and
Hmm.
writing the history of it, and sort of coming up with political factions and all that, and changing their backstory and making it a bit more immersive. And you remember in the manual for Elite 2, there was a sort of a letter from a funeral director or someone, or someone in charge of
Yeah.
the estate of Commander Jameson, and here's your ship and your money and your 100 credits and whatever. And I'd done a sort of the same kind of a concept, but I mean completely different kind of a letter to the player to put in the front of their manual. And my goal was, to start working on the manual because I needed that done as well. But it was quite slow work getting anything approved, and then this came along, and basically everything has dropped, and it's just all my novel at the moment. So I might get
Right.
back into it at some point, but they're doing okay without me.
Hey, yeah, they do seem pretty prolific, those folks. Yeah, didn't what was it, Elite 2? It came with like a commander's log or something. Like, it came with a secondary manual that was like a log or something.
There's a few things. There was so the manual had the letter from the estate at the front. Then it was just a manual, and then they had the ship guide at the back. But it was, I can't remember his name. But instead of just being a dry description of things, it had the dry description. Then it had some secondhand ship salesman sort of comments on it to sort of liven it
Yes.
up. And then there was
Yes.
the gazetteer, which was a breakdown of the history of the universe.
That's what I was thinking of, the gazetteer.
Yeah. And
Yes.
then it had descriptions of some of the main systems. And then there was the short story fiction collection as well. Stories of Life on the Frontier.
Right. God, I wish games still came with stuff like that.
I know, it's silly, but having a nice shiny box, you open up all these books inside to read. Like, I love reading manuals.
Oh
I don't know
God,
why, but
I
you get.
still I still if I am buying older games, I'll still buy the physical copy, just to have the manual. Like, you ever played the Rules of Engagement games?
No,
Those
I
are
haven't.
capital ship simulators from the early 90s,
Okay.
and I swear the manuals for those things are just things of beauty, like 150, 200 pages of total space geekery. Seriously, I miss that. I miss that stuff. Even put it in a PDF nowadays with the download. Just give me that extra stuff. But they don't anymore. It's just so sad.
Well, with the Kickstarter for Elite Dangerous, they've got the normal boxed edition, then there's the ultimate, or ultimate supporters pack, whatever, platinum edition pack, and that's going to have a few bits and bobs in it as well. I think it's even going to have a t-shirt in it or something. But
Nice.
I'm really hoping they just come out with a, I mean, I'm getting a copy of the game to download. It's sort of as part of the writer's pack pledged ahead.
I would hope
I get the
so.
game downloaded, and I get unlimited updates for life. So that's all very cool.
Oh, very nice.
I wouldn't mind, actually just getting a box. I think I sold my boxes as part of the tea. You get the box as well, but I unsold those to pay for the novel. So I'm not actually going to get a box, which is a bit sad. I wouldn't mind us having a box. I've got a small house and I've got no storage, but I still wouldn't mind
Yeah,
a
no,
box.
I'm in a small apartment here. I totally feel you. I mean, I remember back in the day where that's all there was were boxes. That was the best. You'd walk into EB or whatever, there'd be just a whole wall of awesome.
Everything's just in like DVD covers, DVD cases.
If you even find that. There's not as many box copies of PC games anymore, which is kind of a shame. But it does allow us awesome things like Steam.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So are you playing any space games right now?
Besides, no, I'm not playing anything at the moment, no. Just writing. If I have any spare time at night, it's just writing related. And, you know, to do with that, like the blog or my own podcast or marketing for the novel and things like that. So it's all just spare time is 100% and hear the wheel right now.
Oh, wow. I couldn't do that. I'd have to fit in a game in there somewhere. Just even a little bit, you know, like maybe a little bit on the Vita or something. Yeah. I'd go crazy if I didn't have some kind of game somewhere.
Yeah, well, see, writing's my hobby. It's a pastime. I love doing it. And I had a novel that I was working on before it just came along. And, you know, I put that to the back burner. But I like writing. And so it's not, I don't see it as a job. It's something I love doing. And I'm getting to do it for something elite that I love so much.
That
it's
is
just
awesome.
Perfect storm of passion, you know, so it's just not an issue for me.
Now, I gotta say, that sounds like an awesome place to wrap this up. A perfect storm of passion. That sounds fantastic.
Great.
So, John, thank you so much for taking the time to join me for you this afternoon, for me this evening. It was a lot of fun, and I am looking forward to reading your novel once it comes out, because I will definitely get a copy. No question.
Fantastic. Thanks. Yeah. Cool.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, I'll catch you later.
Have a good night, man.
You too. Bye. See you later.